Shalom and welcome to On the House, the podcast where industry experts and professionals discuss real estate in Israel. I'm your host, Debbie Goldfischer, real estate agent, founder and editor-in-chief of buyitinisrael.com. Join us as we explore market trends, legal and tax issues, purchasing tips, neighborhoods throughout Israel, and much more. All this is On the House, helping you make the right move. Welcome back, everyone, to On the House. We're so excited to bring you the third episode of the sixth season, where we're diving deep into mortgages in Israel. This season is all about helping you make smart, informed decisions when it comes to funding your dream home in Israel. So far, we've covered the different mortgage tracks and options available, breaking down their terms, variability, and everything else you need to know. We've also talked about the role of mortgage brokers, the application process, and the importance of negotiating key components of your mortgage. And for those listening from abroad or planning Aliyah, we've touched on what it looks like for foreigners and Olim to secure a mortgage here in Israel. Before we jump into today's episode, I want to remind you about something. At the end of the season, please God, in a few weeks, we'll host a special Q&A session to answer all your questions about mortgages and financing in Israel. This is a great chance to get advice directly from the experts. You can send your questions through the Buy It in Israel website or email them to office@buyitinisrael.com. Now, for today's topic, we're going a step further to talk about what happens over the life of a mortgage. A mortgage is a long-term financial product, often spanning 25 or even 30 years. And as we all know, life happens. Over the course of those years, financial situations can change. Some borrowers might find themselves with unexpected funds, while others may face challenges that make it harder to keep up with payments. That's why it's so important to understand the tools available, like refinancing, restructuring, or prepayment, to adapt your mortgage to life's ups and downs. To help us unpack all of this, I'm thrilled to welcome Moishi Zak. Moishi, also known as Moises, isn't just an experienced mortgage professional. He's also a trusted colleague and a close family friend. Moises is a highly regarded mortgage broker specializing in the high net worth market, where he has earned a reputation as a true diamond in the rough. Starting his professional journey in the prestigious Diamond Bursa, Moises honed his precision, attention to detail, and dedication to exceptional service, qualities he has carried out into his work at First Israel Mortgages. Much like diamonds formed under pressure, Moises thrives in high-stakes situations, guiding clients through complex financial scenarios with ease. At First Israel Mortgages, he is known for saving his clients both time and money by offering actionable advice on cost management and strategic financial planning. And with that, Moises, or Moishi, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. A pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Before we get started, let's talk a little bit about your background. First of all, your name, Moises. Come on, where's this from? You're not from America and you're not from the UK.
So that's a very good question. And I was born in Mexico, and in Mexico, the Mexican or Spanish version of Moishi, or Moshe, as they say it in Hebrew, is Moises. And therefore, I guess I've kept my original name as Moises.
Good for you. You're certainly different. A rare diamond.
Got to be different to succeed, you know. We try to do things a little bit differently than everybody else. We try to touch upon things that people don't necessarily look at. And having a global and holistic approach to, especially to one of the biggest loans or biggest financial obligations that people will take upon themselves in their lifetime, is really what's required.
Absolutely. So before we get into the work that you do, tell us how did you transition, or why did you transition from the diamond industry into the mortgage industry?
I've been in the diamond industry most of my professional life, starting from learning how to polish diamonds in a factory on 47th Street in New York. Long late hours of a very, very long summer. Then learning the rough trade business in the family office, working to buying polished diamonds in Tel Aviv, working to moving on to selling polished diamonds in New York, and then back to Israel and learning to buy, to both purchase and sell polished diamonds in Israel. Having said that, and you know, there were very, very good years in the diamond business, don't get me wrong, the diamond business has changed drastically over the last, now it's already, let's say, 20 years, starting 20 years ago. And therefore, I felt that, you know, where will the future be for the diamond industry? And I started to look for other opportunities. And therefore, I was examining different options that were available, having a little bit of a very global network by the fact that I was born in Mexico. I lived in LA, I lived in New York, my father's from Belgium, my wife is English. I was able to have quite a few interesting opportunities, and I decided to join two friends of mine that were actually neighbors that have a boutique mortgage brokerage, which they started 14 years ago. I'm with them now for 10 years, and thank God, Baruch Hashem, it's been a great journey so far.
Wonderful. Says a lot about you. You're proactive, you're forward-thinking, and you're very well connected. So as we said, a mortgage is a long-term commitment. Over the life of the loan, some people find themselves in a stronger financial position. Maybe they're earning more, or they get a bonus or an inheritance, or they want to pay off the mortgage faster. Others may want to increase their cash flow or free up money for other investments. On the other hand, life can bring challenges. Expenses go up and income can go down, and suddenly it's harder to keep up with payments. On top of that, macroeconomic factors like changes in interest rates or inflation can impact the terms of your mortgage, as can the change in the rules and regulations relating to mortgages. And when these things happen, borrowers might explore options like refinancing, renegotiating the terms, or even pausing payments for a while. All essential tools to help manage the situation while staying committed to home ownership. On that note, let's start with early repayment. Can you tell us, for someone who comes into unexpected funds like an inheritance or a work bonus?
The way it works in Israel is that there is a potential prepayment penalty depending on which products you have taken out on your mortgage. There are variable rates, there are adjustable rates, and there are fixed rates. Variable rates, such as prime, which is a variable rate, does not have a potential prepayment penalty.
So one second, if somebody has a mortgage that is variable, or the component of the mortgage is variable, he can pay that off at any point with
no
penalty.
There will be absolutely no penalty with 10 days written notice. Otherwise, there's a nominal fee. But yes, okay, there is no prepayment, as we call it, on a variable
on
product.
Okay.
Now, adjustable rates and fixed rates have a potential prepayment penalty. Why do I say potential? Because there will only be a penalty if rates at the time of prepayment are lower than the time that you took out your loan. Adjustable means that you're on a, there's a, depending on the bank, but there's a 2-year adjustable, a 5-year adjustable, a 7-year adjustable, 2.5-year adjustable as well. That means that depending on the bank, which index they will use, but there's a way to lock in the same way that you're locking in a completely fixed rate for as long as a term you want, up to 30 years,
mm-hmm,
right? You can have a 30-year fixed rate, you can have a 20-year fixed rate, 10-year, you can have a 12-year, you can adjust the term of the fixed product. So too, there are different adjustables that you're locked in for, again, 2-year, 5-year, 7-year, depending on the bank. Which
so it's a
product.
Fixed rate that varies periodically.
That is correct. It doesn't vary, it readjusts.
Okay.
You're locking in a spread when you fund the mortgage, and it's the base rate plus a spread. So that base rate will adjust every time that, which, depending on which product you choose, it will adjust. So the 2-year will adjust every 2 years, the 5-year every 5 years, the 7-year every 7 years.
So if the rate is adjustable or fixed, then there might...
So there's a potential for a prepayment penalty on an adjustable or a fixed rate if when you want to repay, the rates at the time are lower than what they were when you took out the loan. So
because obviously
example,
the bank doesn't want to lose out on
exactly
what they could have earned on you.
Exactly. So how does the bank calculate the potential prepayment penalty? It would be the difference in the rate multiplied by the amortized balance of the loan on that product and the amount of years that are left. So just as a simple example, if you were to borrow, let's say based on today, a 30-year fixed, let's say around 5%. So let's use a round number, 5%. If you borrow on a 30-year fixed at 5%, and in 10 years, you would like to pay off that product, and rates on a 30-year fixed at the time are 4%. So there's a difference of 100 basis points. It would be 100 basis points multiplied by the amount of years that are left, which is 20 years, and the amortized balance at the time. In 10 years' time, correct. And of course, there's also a discount after 3 years, after 5 years. Of course, if rates are higher, there's no penalty. But if rates are lower, there is a penalty.
Understood. So let's just say, for example, you have a loan of 1 million shekels. It's gone down by 1%. And now you owe, let's just say, 900,000 shekels mm-hmm. for another 20 years. Mm-hmm. So you're multiplying 900
by the
times
difference.
1% times 20.
Correct. But there's a discount after 3 years and there's a discount after 5 years.
I see. So the earlier on in the loan that that you pay off, mm-hmm. the higher the penalty.
The earlier on that you pay off, the higher the penalty. And the later on that you pay off, the higher the discount.
Got it. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Because they want you to stay for as long as possible.
Because the bank allocates the money aside. So, of course. So, okay. The bank, as we say, like in the casino, the bank always wins.
Let's go back to these penalties. When are they determined?
So, before we go back to the penalties and when they're determined, I think the first question that I will always ask a client when they're taking out a mortgage is, are you looking for long-term debt or are you looking for short-term debt? In other words, some people have plans that they would like to pay it off in a couple of years. I'll give you an example. I have a client who's right now, I'm actually refinancing him on 12 million shekels, and he knows that in the next 5 years, he wants to pay off half of the debt. So of course, he's not taking the entire debt on a 30-year fixed. Mm-hmm. However, he wants to take the debt, part of the debt that he knows that he wants to pay off because he has plans to sell certain assets or whatever it might be, to take that on a adjustable rate. So he has an exit every, again, depending on which adjustable you choose, but you could have, let's say, a 2-year, for example, a 5-year adjustable or a 7-year, you have an exit every 2, 5, or 7 years with no penalty.
I see.
So therefore, he's planning to refinance the existing debt in a way to minimize his any potential penalty.
These exit points, they're predetermined when he takes the mortgage out.
That is
specific
correct.
Dates. And like, how does it work? He has to pay back the money on those exact dates, or
so
is
right
there a
before,
window?
Yeah, so right, you have an exit right when that term comes up at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to pay back before the time, so the potential prepayment penalty will only be till that exit point. So if you're, for example, taking on a 5-year adjustable and you're in year 3 and you want to pay it off for whatever reason, the only potential penalty will be for the next 2 years because it's
until
a 5-year adjustable.
Point.
So you're into year 3, there's 2 more years left.
Uh-huh.
If you're on the 2-year adjustable and you're into you're at year 1, there's only 1 year left. So that will definitely reduce or minimize any potential penalty.
I see. And if he pays back on the exit point,
then
there's no penalty.
Correct. There's no penalty.
So the bank will lose out.
He has an exit point if he takes an adjustable every predetermined time.
I see. I guess that's factored into the price of the mortgage.
Of course, because if you're asking, that's a very good question, because today, funny enough, adjustable rates are actually higher than completely fixed rates.
For this very reason, probably.
One of the reasons. There's other reasons that they factor to how they determine the rates, but yes, it's basically based on the bond market and such. So, but yes, there's a significant difference between adjustable rates and completely fixed rates.
Right. So tell me, Moshe, how do you evaluate whether paying off part of a mortgage is the best financial decision for your client?
So generally speaking, why do people borrow money? It's all a question of what their money is doing for them. So people are borrowing money because they're earning on their money more than they are paying in terms of interest.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if just say for argument's sake, rates in Israel today are between 5 to 5.5%. People who are borrowing at that range are generally speaking making more than 5 to 5.5% on their money.
So now let's move on to life circumstances like a job loss or health crisis, chas v'shalom, can make it hard to keep up with payments. In such a case, what are the options?
The bank qualifies you based on the income that you have at the time that you take out the loan, right? Of course, the bank assumes, if you will, that you're able to service the loan. If somebody has specific issues during the time, you might have to bring in a co-borrower. You might have to speak to the bank to see if they can freeze payments for a while. Here in Israel, for example, during COVID, the banks allow people to freeze their payments and not make payments for a certain amount of time. So sometimes there are extenuating circumstances where the bank understands that there's a problem, people are not working or whatever it might be, you know, but that's like more of a one-off. That's not
a normal short-term solution.
Yeah, it's a short-term solution. Otherwise, people would have to possibly bring in a co-borrower to help them mm-hmm. sustain the payments. It's interesting to point out that in Israel, the foreclosure rate is minimal, right? People do whatever they can in order to not lose their property. They'll do whatever they can to make sure that they make their mortgage payments.
I assume that the banks are also supporting that. They're trying to do whatever they can to help people not
the
foreclose.
The banks are not interested on foreclosures. It's very, very different to the States. In the States, obviously, you know, during the crisis, foreclosure rate was extremely high. Here, that
you don't hear about
if you look
it.
At the if you look at historically in Israel, what the foreclosure rate is, it's minimal.
Or Hashem. What about if somebody is struggling and they want to increase the term of their loan, the length of their loan, to make their monthly repayments lower?
So the bank, of course, predetermines the time when you take out the mortgage, the length of the loan is predetermined,
okay.
Right? The banks in Israel do discriminate based on age. So the bank would like that the mortgage be fully amortized when the borrowers are approximately 80 years old. Therefore, it's unlikely if somebody's already gotten a 30-year loan that they'll be able to go beyond that. In other words, if they're hitting that threshold. So if somebody's like really young who took out a 30-year-old, they might be able to refinance and extend the term. Yes, that might be a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, if you're older, like in America, a 70-year-old could take out a 30-year loan. That doesn't exist in Israel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and besides the term of the loan, is there anything else that can be renegotiated?
You can refinance. Of course, if rates have come down, you can refinance. And like we discussed earlier, there might be potential penalties on certain products, but it depends obviously if it's worth it or not. So if you're refinancing, you have to do the calculation if it's worthwhile to take that penalty and build it into the new loan,
mm-hmm.
if it's worthwhile to refinance.
So tell us about the process for requesting to refinance. What do you do?
So the first thing that I ask clients are two things. First of all, send a payoff letter, which shows exactly what products they have, any potential penalties that are on any of the products that they have. So that's called in Hebrew a siluk mashkanta, a payoff letter. That's asked directly from the bank or from the customer service line, and the two-year payment history. The two-year payment history is because no bank will be interested or keen to refinance a loan that there's issues with payments. So mm-hmm. if somebody doesn't have a clean payment schedule, it'll be very, very difficult to refinance an existing loan. You can have people who are qualified borrowers and they're very lousy in making their mortgage payments for 150 different reasons, didn't manage, didn't see, didn't happen. And if they have a bad payment history, even though they're good borrowers, it's a big problem.
I see.
Having a clean payment history in Israel on your mortgage is like really, really tops. It's like essential.
It affects your whole credit rating for everything.
It's more than just the credit rating, because credit rating can affect you for other things. In terms specifically about a mortgage, if the bank sees that you have issues with paying your mortgage on time, so to speak, nobody would like to touch you.
Sure. You said they have to give you the payoff letter, the siluk mashkanta. What else?
The two-year payment history.
Two-year payment history.
And once you have that, we can analyze if it's worthwhile to refinance or not.
Uh-huh. And then what do you do?
So depending if it's going to be an internal refinance or not.
Internal meaning in the same bank?
Internal meaning in the same bank. If it's an internal refinance, we submit it for the requested new products. Like I just did now. Actually, this week we had a client who had a variable rate, which has, of course, gone up over the years. So we refinanced it into an adjustable rate. And he wanted actually interest only for 2 years to lower his payments. And once that was approved, we had the person who was signing on their behalf, whether it's their lawyer or whoever they're appointed as a power of attorney, to come in and re-sign on the file. And it funds usually within 2 days. And then they're good to go. So it's a very simple, easy process if it's the same bank. If it's another bank, it's a more complicated process. It's a new submission. All, income documentation is required. We will submit to the relevant banks. And then, so to speak, it's like taking out a new mortgage.
Amazing. Okay. I was going to ask you, but I think we've sort of covered it. Why is it so important to refinance or restructure before missing a payment? And how can borrowers take proactive steps to avoid this situation?
Yeah, so I just want to mention that, of course, in Israel, the only way to pay a mortgage is having a direct debit set up. And therefore, the direct debit has to be set up before the mortgage funds.
From a bank in Israel?
Of course, from a bank in Israel in the personal name of the borrowers. And therefore, the only thing the clients have to really do is make sure they have funds in the account, because the monies are going to be withdrawn whether they like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like in America that you can just call up and pay or send a check or whatever it might be. Here it's directly taken out of your account.
Basically, make sure you have money in the account and then nothing can go wrong.
Exactly. One thing for Americans, of course, sometimes they're converting dollars, sending into shekels, and they don't, till it converts, till it doesn't convert, uh-huh. they have to just make sure that they have.
So the timing is
the
everything.
Shekels, or generally speaking, it's going to be shekels, enough shekels in their account.
Very important. Okay. Sorry. It's interesting, Moshe, because I'm wondering, why would the banks agree to refinance an existing mortgage? What's in it for them? And under what circumstances are they most likely to approve a refinancing request?
Well, things change. Everything in the world is changing. We're living in a very changing world right now, especially in December of 2024. And therefore, the banks understand that. So, prices are built in and penalties, of course, are calculated as such. And therefore, the bank can allow somebody to refinance. And if there's a built-in penalty, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're keeping the debt and they're continuing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would imagine as well, it's a very competitive market and everything is out there. Information is very transparent. So I would imagine they have to, you know, they have to deal with what the reality is.
Unfortunately, information in Israel is not transparent. Actually, that's part of why we exist. There are no published indexes in Israel and clients have no idea what rates are. So there's no way to check what rates are like that you can in the States. And therefore, really understanding how you can mix and match different products is really key into having the optimal mortgage structure.
Mm-hmm. I remember when we first made Aliyah about 26 years ago and we signed up for cell phones, there was a two-year commitment. There was no such thing as jumping around. And then...
The good old days.
The good old days, oh yeah. And then a law came in at some point that they couldn't make you commit. They had to let you go at any point. And it was fair, you know, fair, how do you say, fair competition. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's the same thing here. Like they have to let you go. Obviously there's a penalty, but they can't keep you for 30 years if you get better terms or you know, rates elsewhere.
That is correct. Here in Israel, you can refinance and you can jump bank to bank. Of course, there's the headache, the cost and the time that's involved. So people typically don't do that very often, but there are certain opportunities which people have, or there's opportunities where we have actually proactively reached out to our clients where we saw opportunities for them to refinance and, you know, save significant savings. So, for example, a simple example would be when our clients took out dollar-linked loans where effectively they were paying around 2% and the dollar index jumped up, you know, over time. They were going up to 6 or 7% effective. So we, wow, you know, we proactively reached out to them to refinance to either adjustable or to fixed rates to save them sometimes like up to 300 basis points.
Unbelievable. I'm sure they're very grateful. So I was going to ask you, as mortgage brokers, do you actively monitor each client's mortgage or do you, like, how does it work? Do you rely on them coming to you and asking you to refinance?
Generally speaking, you know, once we fund a mortgage and we do whatever we need to do related to that specific deal, we've done our job.
The file's closed.
The file is closed. The mortgage starts running. They make payments and Shalom al Yisrael. We hope to see them and be friends with them. We don't always have the pleasure of meeting our clients because most of them are abroad, but that's normally what happens. We're always happy to help when we can, when clients have, you know, various requests throughout the process. You know, during the life of the loan, it's a little bit understood that we're not here. I'm not the bank, so we're here to help however we can. Mm-hmm. I will try to help my clients, you know, in whichever way I can. However, you know, there's certain things that they'll have to go directly to the bank for. You know, if it's easy for me to pull something for them, some information, with the greatest pleasure. But generally speaking, once we fund the mortgage, the relationship is. You know, their commitment is with the bank, and
like you just said, you certain things stick out. If you have a client whose portfolio is at risk, you know.
So yeah, so we, like I mentioned, if there's an opportunity to refinance clients, that's obviously a win-win. You know, mm-hmm. we're here to save our clients time, energy, and of course, money. That's mm-hmm. why we exist in Israel. It's illegal for banks to pay us, so we have our clients' best interests at hand, and therefore, if there's an opportunity to save them money, then of course it's a win-win.
Sure. Say that again. It's illegal for the banks to pay you?
Yes, in Israel, it's illegal for the banks to pay brokers.
So that's really important to know, because I have heard some people said in the past, you know, why should I work with a broker? They're getting kickbacks from the bank. They're going to put me into the bank that gives them the best rate.
Thank God it's not that way. And actually, I prefer it that way, because this way our clients know from the get-go that we're here on their side. We're here to protect their interests. We have no preference which bank we're going to close a deal with. And, you know, we're online with all the banks. So therefore, I have all the opportunities available to
Fantastic.
Me.
Fantastic. And you're working only for the client.
We're working for the client and it's net savings to the client. So the relationships that we have with the banks, because of the volume that we do, will bring net savings to the client.
Fantastic. So how often would you say borrowers should review their mortgage setup?
That's a very good question. Usually people will reach out when they see that suddenly their mortgage payment has increased significantly. Mm-hmm. You know, some people notice it more, some people notice it less, but generally speaking, people will have an eye on their mortgage payment. And if there's a sudden change, they will reach out.
They'll let you know.
They'll let you know, or they'll ask, you know, what happened or what, you know, and sometimes you just have to explain to them that they're on a variable rate and the rates have gone up. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, if it's worthwhile, there's an opportunity, then, of course, the discussion about a refinance will kick in.
What is the best way for a borrower to evaluate their current terms and decide if improvements can be made? Besides waiting to see that the monthly payment has gone up. Is there anything that they can take a look at that they can monitor?
So, of course, it very much depends on what products they're on. If a borrower is on a fixed rate, he might just be happy to keep the fixed rate. He knows what he's locked it in at. And let's say, for example, today, fixed rates are somewhere between roughly 4.7 to 5% on a 30-year fixed. Historically, a 30-year fixed has been 4.47%, if you look at the Bank of Israel website. So it's not historically significantly higher than what it's been the last, 15 years, roughly. Mm-hmm. But of course, depending on what product he's on, if you want to monitor the adjustables, or if you want to, of course, monitor a variable rate, that's something which can be monitored. And of course, I can point them in the right direction as to where they should be looking for that.
I would imagine with the rate hikes over the last few years, you've been busy with a lot of refinancing.
Yes, we've had lots of refinances. When the dollar rates started to go up, we refinanced all of our dollar-linked clients who were in dollar-linked loans.
Even though some of them were abroad and earning dollars?
Yes, correct, because the rates significantly rose. So therefore, people wanted to lock in lower rates, again, like either a completely fixed rate or an adjustable, even though they were on a variable.
Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that also with the inflation that we've been seeing, especially over COVID, and since then, I mean, it's not as drastic as it was then, but it's more moderate. But I would imagine that inflation-linked mortgages have also prompted people to refinance.
Most definitely, because, if you have an inflation-linked loan, you're compounding interest on the principal. So you can have a lower rate of, let's say, 2, 3%, but if it's linked to the inflation, which is around 3.5% today, it's really effectively somewhere around 6%. Mm-hmm. So people would prefer to be in a completely fixed rate, not linked to inflation, at around 5%, or an adjustable, a little bit higher than 5%, as opposed to being in a loan that's linked to inflation. Personally, I have not organized a loan for a client that's been linked to inflation since I started.
How interesting. Even though the rates are lower.
Even though the rates are lower, of course.
And when inflation was very low?
Still, people don't want to take that risk.
Interesting. Tell me, Moshe, is there any specific success story or a moment that stands out to you over all your years in this business?
There are many, to be very honest.
Come on, share one with us.
I did a refinance for a client a couple of years ago. Besides, of course, getting him significantly better rates than what he had, we actually also got him a full waiver on life insurance. And I'll never forget the number that I calculated for how much savings he would have on life insurance. That was 1.3 million shekels over the remainder of the term that he would have.
How'd you do that?
So by getting him a waiver on life insurance, that was net savings of 1.3 million shekels.
Unbelievable. But don't you need life insurance to take a mortgage?
Many people think that it's a definite requirement. However, there are many, many situations, of course, depending on who the borrowers are and how strong the borrowers are, that we are able to get them a waiver. So if they have assets abroad, or if they have, life insurance abroad, it's a case-by-case decision for the bank, but very often we're able to get strong borrowers a waiver on the life insurance requirement.
Kol kavod.
Also in Israel, just keep in mind that it's not what Americans call life insurance. Here it's mortgage insurance, which they call bituach chayim, which they call life insurance, but it's linked to the amortized balance of the loan. So the life insurance policy keeps on amortizing with the balance of the loan. As opposed to in America, if you take out a $1 million policy, it stays at $1 million. Until the end of the term.
In other words, it's just to cover whatever is outstanding on the mortgage.
The balance of the mortgage. And the idea behind it, of course, is that, God forbid, if something happens to the borrowers, the life insurance policy will cover the mortgage balance, pay off the bank, and the family will keep the property. Also interesting to point out that in Israel, the banks classify the loan based on the purchase of the loan. So there are purchase loans, there are cash out loans, there are commercial loans, and sometimes there's actually some room, we'll call it wiggle room, if you may.
Opportunity.
It's definitely an opportunity to refinance loans depending on how they were classified at the bank. And therefore, really looking to see how the bank classified somebody's loan would allow you to possibly refinance it at significantly better terms. Without going into specifics, but we've had a few clients that have had, jumbo loans, very large loans, and we managed to refinance them at significantly lower rates because of the way that their loan was classified. So really looking at the small little details as to how a loan is classified in the bank system can make a huge difference in terms of how you can refinance it and what options you have available to you in terms of course, net savings to the client.
Are you able to reclassify it during the life of the loan?
You cannot reclassify a loan, but the banks can refinance based on what classification it is in.
Mm-hmm. So you really have to think out of the box.
Yes.
And you have to make sure that at the outset that you classify it correctly.
That's of course, but there's a little bit of wiggle room there sometimes as to how banks classify it and what documentation they can provide in terms of how it's classified, which can allow sometimes amazing opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Is there any common mistake that borrowers make?
I think something that borrowers do not understand is when they hear about lower interest rates when you have a loan that's linked to inflation. I think a lot of people don't understand how that works. And I think they get sucked into the trap of borrowing at a lower rate, even though it's linked to inflation, because they don't understand how that plays out. So that's something which people really have to understand well, that there's inflation that will be due on top of the principal, et cetera, and it's compounded interest. And people are really, really not aware, and they don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
They just, you know, hear a lower number in terms of an interest rate. They're like, oh, I'll borrow at 2% as opposed to borrowing at 5%, because 2 is definitely lower than 5. But obviously that's not the whole story.
Mm-hmm. So when news comes out that the Bank of Israel has reduced the interest rates, are you bombarded with calls and WhatsApps? Emails?
So that's a very good question, but that would only affect, for example, prime. So if Bank of Israel lowers the Bank of Israel lending rate, so that would affect people that are on prime. It doesn't necessarily across the board affect all products. It wouldn't affect fixed rates or adjustable rates.
Right.
Those are based on other indexes.
What other events would you say trigger these messages or these requests?
Rates in the States, for example, people are looking at what rates are in the States. You know, they don't always correlate to what they are in Israel, but people, you know, sometimes want to see if there's a big move in the States, if that affects Israel, for example. Global events can, of course, affect, you know, the world globally. So that, of course, one thing can affect something else.
Of course. So I know that you work with many clients overseas, and you've mentioned that you are a globally connected professional. What trends are you seeing in today's market? Are you seeing a surge in interest from foreign buyers and foreign borrowers?
So since the beginning of the war, I think we've seen a very steep increase in terms of demand for and inquiries for purchases/mortgages. We've had, I think, a significantly higher demand this year, in my opinion. The numbers might be the same in terms of mortgages funded, but in terms of demand or inquiries, most definitely, of course, anti-Semitism being the number one factor. And, you know, rates in Israel compared to the U.S. are actually very attractive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if a 30-year fix in the States today is somewhere around 6.5%, roughly, in Israel, we're talking closer to 5%. So in terms of rates, Israel is also much more attractive in terms of taking fixed rates.
Okay, before we wrap up, Moshe, let's go back to the refinancing process. Tell us a little bit about the length of time it takes and what's involved.
If it's an internal refinance, we're going to submit for the requested structure of how we would like to take out the debt currently, you know, on better options or better on a better structure. Of course, depending on the client's needs. If it's going to another bank or other banks, then, of course, we're going to submit a new file. So a new file means updated documentation, et cetera, et cetera. Typically, to get an approval takes, on a new mortgage, takes 5 to 7 business days, of course, depending on the loan amount. And normally, I would allow for around 60 days, 45 to 60 days for the mortgage to be able to fund.
And then what happens? It just transfers from one bank to the other?
Yeah, so the new bank will pay off the existing bank.
Moshe, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your unique insights into the refinancing options, breaks and deferments of mortgages in Israel. Before we wrap up, I have two final questions that I love to ask my guests. Firstly, where in Israel do you live and what made you choose that location?
Wow. So I live in Jerusalem, the heart of Israel.
Lucky you. Where in Yerushalayim?
I live in Rechavia Shari Chesed specifically, which is a very, very centrally located
amazing
area.
Location.
You know, it's a 20-minute walk to the Kotel, 10-minute walk to the Shuk.
How often do you go to the Kotel?
Not often enough.
Well,
I actually was just there this Saturday night, this Motzei Shabbos, so that's not enough.
Not enough. 20 minutes, wow.
And I guess that's a place where my wife and myself felt that we'd be most comfortable. So we started there and we're still there 20 years later.
Unbelievable. Lucky you. And finally, if you could move anywhere else in the country, where would it be and why?
Wow. You know, everybody has this dream of living in a moshav with lands and acres of, you know, for the kids and all that. And I don't know about a farm, but somewhere really quiet and remote. But it's really hard to move from city. Like, I grew up in Manhattan. I'm living in Jerusalem to move out on a moshav. But you never know.
That's what you want?
No, I didn't say that.
So where would you go?
Where would I go? If I would have to actually choose, maybe like somewhere like Caesarea, because Caesarea, you really don't feel like you're in Israel, even though you're in Israel.
Interesting.
And
we're trying to get people to come to Israel.
There's something special about Caesarea that doesn't have, you know, the rush and the busyness of most places in Israel.
Interesting.
And I actually love Caesarea.
Beautiful.
So if I would have to choose, maybe Caesarea.
Okay. Well, I hope one day you'll fulfill your dream and get a house in Caesarea.
Please God.
Mitz Hashem. And I will make sure to leave Moshe's contact information in the notes. Moshe is, as you can all hear, an amazing professional, out-of-the-box thinker. And as you all know, I bring on people who share the passion and who genuinely want to help all of our brothers and sisters find their way home. To all of our listeners, thank you once again for joining us for today's episode of On the House. Next week, we will have a special guest from one of Israel's major banks joining us to continue our discussion about mortgages, but from a slightly different angle. It's going to be an exciting and informative episode, so be sure to tune in. And don't forget, we'll be hosting a special Q&A session at the end of the season to answer all your questions about mortgages and financing a home in Israel. Please submit your questions through the Beit in Israel website or email them to office@beitinisrael.com. Thank you once again for being here, and we'll see you next week on the House. Thank you for listening to On the House. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe and share it with your family and friends. You can also visit buyitinisrael.com, where you can find news, market updates, guidance, and much more on real estate in Israel. That's buyitinisrael, B-U-Y-I-T, inisrael.com. If you have a question or a specific topic you'd like us to cover on this podcast, please email us at the address you'll find at the bottom of the show notes. Whether you're thinking about Aliyah, looking for a home or a haven, or wanting to support the Israeli economy, now is the time to buy it in Israel.